No, no. This is Pittsburgh Section National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. This is Gabrielle Dinman interviewing David Kranz, May 9, 1991. Mary Harrison is the recorder.
Okay. All right.
We're at the Anison House in Squirrel Hill. David, would you please tell us your full name, your address, where and when you were born?
All right, my full name is David, and the middle name is Milton, which I never use, and Kranz with a C, and I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, I believe at the Wexler Baby Hospital on Neville.
Wexler?
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's correct. One of the few children of my era to be born not at home, but at a maternity hospital, and I believe it was located right next door to the Sampson Funeral Home today. And it was on September 26, 1924.
Okay. David, could you give us a little information about your immediate family background, your father, his name, when he was born, your mother, so forth?
Father's name is Jacob, and mother's name was Rose, maiden name Grossman, G-R-O-S-S-M-A-N. They were both born in what I understand at the time was called Bessarabia, but I'm not sure that that is an absolute truism, and somebody told me that the maternal side came from what is now Moldavia in Russia. Yeah, in Russia, one of the provinces.
Your mother?
The maternal side, yes. But my mother and father were both born in Russia, somewhere. The old story between Poland and Russia, and I guess sometimes they were under Poland, sometimes they were under Russia. And somebody said, "Why are you so happy today?" I said, "I'm glad the Poles took it back. I can't stand those Russian winters." So they came from there, but they came to this country really as children. I think they were both, one probably was 3 or 4, one was probably, 6 or 7. As far as I can tell, it was the mid-1890s. When they arrived here, my grandfather's name was Frank Kranz.
What is it?
Frank, F-R-A-N-K. Ephraim, I guess in Hebrew, but it was Frank Kranz. And his wife's name, my maternal grandmother, was named Fanny. And I remember them pretty well, and they both passed away in the mid-1930s. I think one in 33 and one in 34, and I was at least 10, 11 years old at the time, so I had pretty good remembrance of it. My grandfather, unfortunately, was killed by an automobile crossing Stanton and Negley on his way to Saturday night services at Margaretta Street Shul, and he was like mid-60s. He wasn't that old of a man. My maternal grandparents, his name was Jacob Grossman.
Maternal?
Maternal, yeah. Jacob Grossman, and my grandmother's name was Leah, L-E-A-H. And they, as far as I know, let's see, my grandfather died when I was in the service during World War II, and I think it was in January of 1945, and my grandmother passed away in the early 50s, like 1952. They were, the grandparents, as far as I know, very, I won't say secretive, but very quiet about from whence they cometh, and nobody ever really knew much about the villages or the towns they lived in. But I do know that in a very short space of time, the Kranz side of the family became merchants, in that my grandfather opened a rather large and successful jewelry store in Lawrenceville near 40th Street. And he ran this for a number of years, and I assume that he came here, say, 1895, 1896. But I do know by 10 years later, he was established enough, obviously had learned the language enough, learned how to do business in this country well enough, that he sent my father to the Western University of Pennsylvania, which was WUP, which today is the University of Pittsburgh.
Western.
It was called Western University of Pennsylvania. And he went there in 1907, because I've seen pictures of this, his class, of his banners. And he was graduated in 1909 from the School of Pharmacy. He had gone to a Central High School in Pittsburgh before that, which I think later became Fifth Avenue High School.
On the Hill.
On the Hill. Okay. But I think that was the high school at the time. And then, so my grandfather had this jewelry store, and then my father worked as a pharmacist at the, I guess, May Drugstore, which was in the corner of 6th and Penn, at a corner from what's now Hines Hall. And he worked as a pharmacist, and my father was a very quiet man, and he never said very much, but I gather once he sort of muttered that he wasn't too thrilled at working the soda fountain, which pharmacists, I guess, did in those days, and he decided that he didn't want to be a pharmacist anymore. So he apprenticed himself to an optometrist and became a licensed optometrist and then opened his own jewelry store, I suppose with my grandfather's help, at the 5100 block of Butler Street in Lawrenceville. And he was not married at the time, but he had this store, which he then had for the next 40 years.
Wow.
And my sister was born in Lawrenceville, but not at that location, because my parents, when they were first married, lived on Main Street between Butler Street and Penn Avenue. And my sister, and I have the one sister.
Is she older?
She's older than I.
When was she born?
She was born in 1917.
And her name?
Her name is Annette, A-N-N-E-T-T-E. And her married name is Briskman, B-R-I-S-K-M-A-N. And she was a school teacher, and she's retired now, but she taught in the Pittsburgh Public Schools for, I don't know, 35 years or something. So my parents eventually then moved to the store, and upstairs from the store and behind the store, and that is where I was born in 1924. And so we lived right with the store, and I did that my entire childhood until I went to the service in the early, in 1943. So I was a product of Lawrenceville, a very small Jewish community, and for some unknown reason to me, the synagogue or little shul was in our backyard, and it was a little frame building, and the small number of Jewish families in that part of Lawrenceville used that building as their shul. I think my father was the treasurer his whole life. And after I was bar mitzvah, I would sleep on Saturday morning, and they would come out of the shul at around 9:45 and yell, "David, get up! They need you for the minyan." So I'd have to hurry down so they could read the Torah. I don't even know if it's still there. I would assume it isn't.
Do you remember the name of the shul?
I do not. I don't know if it ever is. It was a little shul on Butler Street, like the little theater around the corner, right. Or church around the corner. But anyway, they used it for weekly services when the population of the Jewish community in the area got larger. They would rent places, halls elsewhere for the high holidays, and rent themselves a cantor or somebody special to do it, because there was no rabbi attached to this. And sometimes when the population was smaller, they would hold the services there. But the shul was there my whole lifetime anyway. And then, of course, later my family moved to Stanton Heights, my mother and father. But he kept the store. And then I had gone off to the service. I did my schooling was...
Just let me backtrack one second,
sure.
Matt. How did your father meet your mother? Did they know each other as children? Or?
They may have. They may have, because the families certainly knew each other. And I'm not sure, but I suspect they even knew each other in Europe before they ever came here, because we have evidence that at various times the two grandfathers would vacation together by themselves.
Still in what is now Rush?
No. I mean,
in
this
America.
Country, they,
okay.
we're the possessors of a letter in Yiddish where they both took off for Atlantic City for a week, the two of them. So I don't know what they did, but they seemed to be friends, and I would suspect that they knew each other, and I think my parents could have been a product of their friendship.
Do you know the date of their wedding day?
I should. It's February 11th, I think it was the date of 1917.
Okay. Now you say your father was treasurer of the shul for a time. Was your mother involved also in religious or Jewish things?
Yes, but not. This was not a big synagogue, and they opened up Saturday morning and closed Saturday noon. You know, I mean, it wasn't there to be, and there certainly were no community activities. But it was a small Jewish community in Lawrenceville at that time. We were in what was called the 10th Ward, which started at Stanton Avenue and went all the way up toward Highland Park. That's the 10th Ward, up toward Morningside and Chislett Street. On the other side of Stanton Avenue on Poplar is the 9th Ward, which it still is. And so I went to school on this side of it, which then led me to a little school called McCandless.
That was your grade school?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But it was like for 3 years or 4 years, and then we went to McCleary. So McCandless was M-C, capital C-A-N-D-L-E-S-S, and McCleary was M-C, capital C-L-E-A-R-Y. And they were close to one another, and that was more like a middle school. It was like 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th. And I was graduated from there in 37, I guess. Is that right? Yeah, I guess 37. I was about 12 years old, not quite 13 when I got out of the 8th grade. Anyhow, I went to, then because I lived in that ward, I went to Peabody High School, and not to Shenley. If I had lived one block away, I probably went to Shenley. But I went to Peabody High School, and I was a little bit ahead of myself. I guess I had picked up a year at school. I'm not sure that I was bright, but I have a feeling the others weren't as bright. So I think I just skipped a couple of grades here and there. So I got to high school. I was sort of a little kid. I don't think I was 13 yet. But anyway, I went there, and because we lived in Lawrenceville, and we're really away from the Jewish community as such, I was forced to take a bus every day to East End or to go to Hebrew school, because we didn't have one where I was. So it was an effort. I mean, it really, which my parents encouraged me to do. I mean, it was not that I jumped on the bus. Mm-hmm. Saying, yippee, I'm going to Hebrew school. But I did that for a great number of years, and I went to Margaretta Street Shul, which is, I thought, be sure, I guess is the name on Margaretta Street. It's still there. I think it's A-D-A-T-H-J-E-T-H, for sure, and A, J-E.
No, wait, an H?
No, J-E.
J-E.
S-H-U-R-U-N, for sure. It's still there. It's there.
On Margaretta.
Margaretta and I think St. Clair. It's still there, the synagogue's there. And then I went to Sunday school at the same time at B'nai Israel, which was a few blocks away, which is still there too, mm-hmm. and I still belong to that. So I went to Sunday school one place, I went to Hebrew school another. From Lawrenceville, I went to Boy Scouts at B'nai Israel, so everything I had to do was by bus. I really had to take my nickel ride over the hill to Stanton and Negley and walk from there. And my high school was that way too. Every day I had to go to school that way because there were no school buses and we were able, some kids walked, I guess. The money was bad, but at least we had enough money for me to do that. So I went to Peabody and I graduated from Peabody in 1941. I'm just talking here.
No, I want you. That's what we want you to do, and you're so good.
And
you're anticipating my question.
1941, and I was 16 plus. I wasn't quite 17, and I had a pretty good high school life, I suppose. I was young. I was 16 and a half or so when I got out of high school, which was a little bit young. And I did a lot of things in school, a lot of extracurricular activities. I don't know that I was a great student, but I was probably a better than average student. And had no real concept of what I wanted to do at this point in my life. So my dad was an optometrist. I think my mother would have loved for me to be an optometrist. And I didn't really want to do it. And my dad knew that I would be unhappy doing it. So of all strange things, I took a series of scholarship tests. And through the Civic Club of Pittsburgh, I was awarded a half scholarship to where more or less a couple of schools locally. And when I had put down what I wanted to study at Carnegie Tech, I had written down, I had put down printing, because I had taken printing in junior high, or in workshop, whatever that was, manual training they called it, I guess, in our day. And a little bit of Peabody, and all of a sudden, the other choice I had was the drama school, because I had always been interested in the theater and performing a little bit, and I had been president of the theatrical, I think it's called Masque and Wig Club at Peabody. So I put them down with no real understanding of what that meant, and I received a half scholarship. And knowing the financial condition at home, I thought it'd be smart to take that scholarship at least for a year and see what I like or what I don't like. And things were never great with our family financially. There were extra monies, but there was, you know, always monies to live fairly well. Anyway, I took the thing and I went to drama school for a year. And I loved it, and they invited me back, which the drama department, if they don't like you, they don't invite you back. And so I stayed in the theater, and it's collateral things from that point on.
Okay, let me ask you, you said you were in the Masque and Wig Club in high school. Do you remember any plays you were in, any special ones, special parts?
I can tell you, quite honestly, that I was not good enough to be in any of them. I just administered.
You administered,
I produced the show. I really couldn't audition and get anything because I really wasn't very good. But I did put together a couple of productions the school did. One was an original musical. We had some strange young man at school who had come from Czechoslovakia who was already in his 20s, so he worked with me. I was reminded the other day, as I had a meeting this week, we're approaching our 50th high school reunion this year, and I was meeting with some people, and they reminded me that the man who's head of the oratorio here and is the organist at, I guess, I forget which church on Shadyside, but Donald Wilkins.
Oh.
You know Donald?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he and I used to sing and dance together. That was my claim to fame. We had an act. Which I think,
this is in high school.
I think he would love to forget.
Huh?
His father used to be head of the musicians' union, the business manager of it. Anyway. But I see Donald Wilkins, you know, through the years. But he and I used to sing and dance. I can't believe that we were anything. Well, he was all right because he was a musician, but I was terrible. But anyway, that was my background. And in school, I did little things. Theatrical, but they were mostly in the producing and writing.
Writing, yes. Uh-huh. Well, how about at Carnegie Tech, which is now Carnegie Mellon?
Yeah. I went there basically not knowing what I got into, I'll be honest with you. But I had to audition, and I guess I auditioned well enough to get in, but in those days, men in those kinds of departments were scarce. So I'm not sure that I was good or the fact that I was male. And more male than the female made it easier because you always had it. We were much more knowledgeable of homosexuals, I think, in the drama department than the rest of the world was in 1941. So it wasn't hard for me to get in. After the war, it was hard to get in because then there were a lot of people that wanted to go.
But you went there before, right from high school.
Okay. Yeah, I was in fact.
Oh, you were too young, right.
Yeah, I was a freshman and went over to rehearse a dumb little show, a freshman show that I'd written called Believe It or Not. It was terrible, wasn't it? My father and my sister dropped me. No, I dropped them off at the Syria Mosque. They went to hear the Pittsburgh Symphony concert. I went over to rehearse the show, and it was December 7th, 1941. Because when I came home, I had the family car, and I drove home, and they were all telling me that the war had started. And I was in school, you know, that year, wondering when the war effort would, you know, catch us all. I had just turned 17, so I wasn't quite as panicky as some of the others. And if I can tell you a little anecdote that's a funny one. I still lived in Lawrenceville when the war began, and I was still going to school, which meant I took my bus to Highland in Stanton, and then took a 73 streetcar to 5th and Morwood, and then walked to Carnegie every day and every night. We worked crew late, you know, somebody were building scenery till 2 or 3 in the morning, and I'm trying to catch a trolley home. You know, I didn't live at school. But one of my favorite stories is the war now is underway, and in Lawrenceville there were several manufacturing plants. Ambridge, I mean, the American Bridge Company had one there, Heppenstall's had one, some of the small branches of U.S. Steel. And I'd get on the bus in the morning to go to school while these shift workers would be going home from an all-night, the open hearth. And I'm here studying drama while the world is fighting for their life, and I'm carrying a makeup box, which we needed for our makeup class, and we carried it. Usually we went and bought a fishing tackle box at a hardware store, put our little things in there, and I'm carrying this with a bunch of books, and I get on a 7:30 bus as these men are coming off the all-night shift, grimy and dirty, and I put my money in, ask for a transfer, and as I do, the catch breaks on my makeup box, and everything rolled down the aisle, and men are yelling, "Here's your lipstick, honey. Here's your rouge." I was so embarrassed that I never took the 7:30 bus again until I was drafted. But that was the life I was leading at that time, frivolous though it may be. So I stayed in school. I managed to get almost my second year in when I left for the service. And I was close enough, as I remember, they gave me all my credits, so that I had 2 years in college, and then I went off to the service. And I was in the service for almost 3 years, like 35 months, I mean, just a month short of 3 years. And I did lots of strange things in the service. One of them was, I had been working very hard on a production in the theater. I was tired, and I remember my blood pressure was so bad they didn't want to take me, and I had to go back 2 days till they finally said they would accept me. And then they stamped limited service, and by the time I got in to Fort Meade in Maryland, it was off my record, so I was another soldier. And luckily, I got assigned to the Army Air Corps, which, you know, later became the Air Force. And like all good people, I got to spend my time in Miami Beach, which was nicer than going to Fort Benning, Georgia. And when they saw that I went to Carnegie Tech, they assumed that I was a engineering type student, so they sent me to meteorology school. And I never understood a thing, but I faked it out. So I became a weatherman in the service. It was very unbelievable. I roomed with also a nice young Jewish man from, I think from California, because he was an aeronautical engineer from Lockheed. He was older than I. And we used to go to school at Chanute Field.
Thanks for that.
C-H-A-N-U-T-E, Chanute Field. And that's Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, where the University of Illinois is. It's about 60 miles or 80 miles down from Chicago.
Champaign.
Urbana, U-R-B-A-N-A.
U-R-B-A-N-A.
And he would try to teach me, so let's go to the movies, and I say, I have to study, and he'd say, I'll explain it to you on the way to and from. So he did. And I graduated 3rd in the class, and he graduated 18th, and I never understood anything.
Did you say his name? Yeah.
Leonard Kaplan.
That's a good name.
But he was a bright college graduate, and I think from Caltech or something, you know, and he knew everything. And he knew enough to challenge them. I didn't know enough except to memorize. So then I was in the service, and I was in Kansas and Topeka, and I was at a place called Russell, Kansas, where Senator Dole is from, as a matter of fact, that little town. I was there for 22 months, And I did all the weather work, and then I sort of did administrative work at the weather station. And I began doing Army shows at that point. I think there was a USO troop that didn't show up one night. So I emceed a whole show at the Officers Club, and that launched that part of my life.
Now you wrote it, or did you act it, or did you do everything?
I wrote it and did it. And so that really started me off.
Could I intervene for a second? Occasionally we do that. Is that the Irving Berlin Army show? Or
no, this was just a local base thing. No, it was not one of the big shows. Because I was still working as a weatherman, but I started doing this on the side. And then I started working, doing little shows weekends and working the officers' clubs on Saturday night and the non-commissioned officers' shows. So I became sort of a GI comic, if that's anything to be proud of. But eventually I went overseas. I went to the Philippines, a couple of places in the Philippines. One was called Leyte, L-E-Y-T-E, the island of Leyte. And the other was the island of Luzon, L-U-Z-O-N, which is where Manila is. So I was stationed outside of Manila. And then I ran into and I was a weatherman again, except sitting around waiting to be assigned, somebody said, "Can anyone here type?" And I raised my hand, so I got to go to headquarters. If I had kept my hand out, I would have been in Zamboanga, where the monkeys have no tails. So I was just as happy to go there. And I worked pretty much at weather headquarters. And I ran into a wonderful man who's still around named David Opatashu.
You got to spell that.
Great actor. O-P-A-T-A-S-H-U. Opatashu.
David?
David. And he was in charge of special services in the Manila area for Far Eastern Air Force. And we got to be friendly. And he had worked with the group theater with Clifford Odets and Francis Farmer and Luther Adler and Morris Karnofsky, all the great people. He was a kid. He was like 19. They were all older. And when he got...
Clifford Odets and Luther Adler.
And Morris Karnofsky, C-A-R-N-O-V-S-K-Y. He was a great actor. He did Waiting for Lefty, Odets' play, and Rocket to the Moon. And he worked with all those people. And when he and I became friendly, and he starts saying, "Well, will you MC this show for me? Will you MC that show for me?" So all the time I was in the Philippines, I worked for the American troops. And I worked for some audiences of Filipinos, too. And it was thanks to David Opatashu, who I saw in latter years in New York. He was, for many times, he would work in the Yiddish theater. Sometimes he would work Yiddish radio. And periodically, I still see him on a movie of the week or something. He now plays old Jewish men, usually, and he's very, very good. But he's still around. I haven't talked to him in the last couple of, last 15, 20 years, but I used to see him. But I see him turn up. So I did all these shows with all these different kinds of people that toured, and some names, you know, people like Gary Merrill was with us, Betty Davis's husband later on, and they would be in the service. They would come through and they would do shows. And then I ran while I was in the Philippines, I had a call from one of my dear friends from Peabody High School and Carnegie Drama School, Al Checco, C-H-E-C-C-O. He's still an actor in Hollywood. C-H-E-C-C-O. He was from East Liberty, and he went to New York after he got out of school, and he then went to California, and he's never quit. He's never done anything but be an actor. Anyway, he's done very well. But we've stayed close friends, and well, anyhow, he called me. He was in the Philippines. We got together, and he was with a special service unit called Stars and Gripes, I think it was a show that
Stars
was touring.
Stars and Gripes?
Yeah, that was touring, like this is the Army type thing. Well, he insisted that he was going to get me transferred out of weather to go with him. And he actually, don't ask me how these crazy actors, they got all the way up to General MacArthur's headquarters, and a telegram or a Twix came down to my commanding officer requesting my transfer to this thing, and I didn't want to go. The war was almost over. I was going to be going home. Never forget that this colonel called me in and said, "Do you want to switch to this?" I said, "Not really." He said, "Well, I can get you out of it." So he goes, I figured with a few months to go, I don't want to go over there and I'd be there for another 6 months or so. But anyhow, I hung around with all these performers over there. And then when I came back to Pittsburgh after I went in April of 43, and I was discharged in February of 46.
May I interrupt one second? Sure. So you stayed with the weather?
Stayed with the weather.
Okay. And were you, what was your rank?
Staff Sergeant.
Staff Sergeant, okay. Now, go on.
So when I came back, my sister and I had been corresponding, and I had become friendly in the Army with a fellow named Tad Mozell, who had written a great book called All the Way Home, for which he later won a Pulitzer Prize.
M-O-S-E-L.
And he was going to go to Yale Drama School to finish up, so I said to my sister, "Get me in Yale." So she sent all the paperwork, and then I was going to go to Yale Drama School for my last 2 years. They had sort of a graduate program. The first 2 years didn't count up there, but the last two you could take, and then graduate school. So I was going to go to Yale. I had the GI Bill. I figured, why not? So I got all the paperwork done, and then the day I got home, they had already started the second semester of that year at Carnegie. And I went over to visit and saw all my friends, and the head of the department was a wonderful man named Henry Boettcher, B-O-E-T-T-C-H-E-R,
yeah.
E-T-T-C-H-E-R. And he said to me, "Oh, I went to Yale. You don't want to go to Yale." He said, "You come back here." I said, "I don't want to come back here." He said, "Well, we're doing Merchant of Yonkers. I'm in rehearsal now." And he said, "Why don't you..."